Now, I've written the intro. Amazing. Done that before. We talk about anything. Have you got any tech adventures? Any banter to talk about?
Well, doing G2G next.
Oh, well, let's mention it's the last show, eh?
Last show, yeah. That'd be good to mention.
Welcome to GCP Life, episode number 72, for Friday, the 30th of August, 2024. GCP Life is sponsored by Mantle Group. At Mantle Group, we make your Google Cloud solutions possible. And I'm your host, Stephen Bancroft. On today's show, Google launches some new CPU types. AI models have been reduced to a simple container. Is the Australian government finally doing something about our country's poor cybersecurity? And we look at the stunning costs of AI in the AI wars. But before we get to any of that, I'd like to introduce the co-host of the show, Adish Panta. How are you, Adish?
I'm good, thanks, Spanky. Good to be back after missing the last show. How are you?
Back in the hot seat. Yeah, no, good, good. We pulled in Ian Brown there last week and we had a blast, I tell you what. While you were under the weather, yeah. Yeah, no, the show must go on. We always publish, and I gave him a quick ring there at the last minute and said, hey, quick, you know, Adish's crook, let's get someone. Can you get in? He's like, straight away. I didn't even finish asking the question as we said in the show, and he was in there. So that was a lot of fun. Yeah, all right. Well, before we kick off, we'll just couple of tech adventures and a few things that are going on. Look, I haven't been doing much. My tech adventures at the moment have been I've got an old Commodore 64 lying around and I want to get it up and working again, and I got it down out of the shelf and I looked at it and that's as far as it's gone. And I got it out and looked at all the parts, and I think I'll just start with cleaning everything up. I want to get it running again and have a bit of retro vibes. I'll just clean everything up, and there's two floppy drives with it that need a bit of a paint job and a bit of a clean up, but that should be fun to go. And last I remember, it just didn't power up. It was a black screen, so I'm going to have to get in, sort some electronics out with it, but that'll floppy be my drives. Fun adventure over the next few weeks. Yeah, floppy drive. No, it's not, and it's not the 3.5, it's not the 3.5 inch, it's the 5.25 inch drives, the big ones.
Oh, wow, the big ones.
The big ones, yeah. So not the real big ones, because there's even a bigger one than that. But yeah. That's what the Commodore 64 used. I've even got a box with some floppies in it. I don't know what condition they're going to be in, but that's sort of something I want to get going again. And so the kids can have a play around, and maybe you can get game cartridges for it as well. You know, plug in like the Nintendo. Maybe I'll get a collection of those.
You reckon you'll be able to get it up and running in the first place?
I don't know. There's going to be some challenges. A lot of the chips now have been made like their homebrew open source versions of the chips, right? That you can get. So if you got a faulty chip, I mean, you could find an original chip, and it's still a 40-year-old chip, and you're probably paying an arm and a leg for it. Or yeah. People have made, you know, copies of them. And you can build an entire Commodore 64 with a copied motherboard and copied chips, like with new components, but it's completely backwards compatible with the old Commodore 64. It is possible to do. But my goal is just to get this thing up and running with minimal purchases and minimal extra components, just as it is. That's my goal.
Don't sell your organs. That's all I can say to get it.
Donate organs, probably. But I still have a half-finished Amiga in a box as well, so that's another little project I've got going on. With the house move and everything, that just got put on the back burner, but I do want to do that. I want to build what I'm calling a reverse sleeper. You have a pimped-out case with LED and all the rest of it, modern hardware, modern case. You turn it on and it's an Amiga 500 from the 1990s.
It's a true Trojan horse.
It's a true Trojan horse, exactly.
Well, my tech adventure has been more on the modern side, not, you know, coming back to the current world, Banky. I've got a GDG talk planned for next week. So just doing a bit of playing around with Cloud Run, looking at all the latest and greatest in Google's offering in Cloud Run. What do I like? What do I dislike? Looking at some real-world use cases of Cloud Run that we've done in the past. So that'll be me.
Yeah, well, we'll get on to the community news later, and we'll cover that item off there. But before we get on with the main part of the show, we do have some housekeeping items and some news to announce. And sadly, Adish, being the co-host of the show, your tenure has come to an end.
Yep. So I have got the co-host curse, as you might know. You know, I signed up for this to get the curse, clearly. No, just kidding. It's been a pleasure working with you, Banky, in the last couple of months. Thoroughly enjoyed the show, and, you know, just having our chats every fortnight. But yeah, my time at Mantle Group is coming to an end, so I will be off the show. But equally, I think, Banky, you have another news as well.
Yes, and to go along with that, we are announcing that this will be the last episode of GCP Life. Yeah, for many reasons. But it's becoming more difficult to find co-hosts that are suitable. That's one of the main reasons. But never fear, it will not be the end of my podcast career. There is a new podcast launching, and it will drop in straight along with the regular cadence of this show, and that is called GCP Bytes. So you can go right now. You can go to www.gcpbytes.com.au. You can find GCP Bytes on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts. You should even be able to find it on YouTube at this point. And we're all set, and we're all ready to punch out a new show, which will kick off. The first episode will be launched on the 13th of September. And you'll find my usual social media posts for that. And the co-host of that show, would you guess, is Ian Brown and David Wall, two previous Mantle Group employees that have since moved on, and you'll find out all about them when you listen to the first episode of the show. I'm sure you know who those guys are. But other than that, nothing really changes. The format of the show is the same. The content of the show will be the same. I might put in some different sorts of, bit of different music and so on. And you can expect the same, you know, shenanigans that we normally have on this show.
So it's same, just with a different name, right?
Same with a different name, you know, it's opening it up now with a little bit more flexibility. You know, if I want to have a break, I can have a break because we've got three co-hosts. And if we can still, you know, Adish, if you want to come on the show, nothing changes as far as that goes. We can still have Mantle Group people on the show. We can still have Google people on the show. We still will be a Google and tech-focused podcast. And nothing changes in that respect. So, yeah, look out for that, GCP Bytes, and I'll be posting it along with the usual socials, et cetera.
So is it GCP Bytes as in B-Y-T-E-S or B-I-T-E-S?
B-Y-T-E-S.
Yes.
GCP Bytes. Yep. All right then, let's get on with the community news.
Yeah, so community news, we've got a GGG Cloud Sydney monthly meetup for September. On the 3rd of, no, 3rd, yes, sorry, 3rd of September, Tuesday, in the Mantle Group office. Got three different talks. One is automating static AI website deployment with Cloud Build by Pradista Bista, a newly minted GDE, I hear. Another one is parallel file upload to GCP storage using Golang by Tushar. And the third one is by yours truly. It will be around Cloud Run and how you can leverage Cloud Run to do awesome things. So yeah, that's the community event. Come around, say hi if you're in Sydney. There is a raffle as per usual for two JetBrain IDE licenses. There's free food and drinks as usual. Just a great night to talk all things GCP, all things technology, really.
Sounds like a fun event, and that's just reiterating the 3rd of September from 5:30 to 8 at the Mantle Group office, which is level 21, 580 George Street in Sydney. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. All right, let's get on with the news items. All right, first news item for this week. Google launches C4 machine series. Now, this is cool. I've actually got a project I'm working on at the moment, and we need these CPUs. C4 VMs now, GA, unmatched performance for control of your enterprise workloads. So C4 is giving us up to 20% better price performance for general purpose workloads and 45% better price performance for CPU-based inference versus comparable generally available VMs from other hyperscalers.
Yeah, so you mentioned that you need these in your projects. I'm in a separate project, and I'm dying to get the hands-on with this as well. Because, so for context, without delving into too much of the detail, we're trying to put a really big database server into VMs because we're trying to do a lift and shift, and we are really, really struggling to find a certain price point that gives us. You can choose C3 or N grade machines, but what we found was their performance were really being throttled when we didn't have a certain disk size. That is not the case with C4 machines, so the price to performance ratio for us was like we'd be paying almost, you know, half the price if we had access to C4 machines.
Right, this is because you're getting that Hyperdisk Extreme, right?
Correct.
You're getting 200 gigs of networking, and you're getting 500,000 IOPS with 10 gigabits per second throughput on Hyperdisk Extreme.
Correct. That's I believe numbers. Hyperdisk Extreme, you can still connect with other machine types, but it's just the performance ratio.
And C4s will scale up to 192 vCPUs with 1.5 terabyte of DDR5. Wow, that's significant.
Yeah. Just a caveat though, right now they're only available in US Central 1, US East 1, US East 4, Europe West 4, Europe West 1, and Asia Southeast 1. So unfortunately, even though it's in GA, it's for all the Australian consumers, we're not quite there yet.
No, and this kind of led to a problem in my project where we spun everything up in Australia Southeast 1 and everything was going happily, and we're going to have to move everything to Asia Southeast 1, which I did in a couple of hours over a weekend. But a little birdie told me that it won't be long before they are available in Australia Southeast 1, so just look out for that.
Yeah, that's what I heard as well. Can't exactly tell when, but yeah, very soon is what I heard.
Yep, very soon. So, you know, our use case was high-performance computing. We need to spin out thousands of cores and need a really high-performance, CPU and throughput. And these fit the bill perfectly.
Yeah. And some of the stats are, you know, the CF4 VMs, they, in some comparisons that Google did, were 61% faster in single thread performance compared to N2. So that's, you know, you can probably get a gauge of how much of an improvement this gives us.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, cool. Well, moving on, to go along with that, we now have some updates to Cloud Run. And the first kind of update to that is you can now access NVIDIA L4 GPUs directly from within Cloud Run. This is interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting because now you're saying like you can run these crazy big models, like, you know, like your Llama 2 models or Gemma 2B models, you know, which are, you know, really big models. And the Google's saying you can run those with, you know, with a cold start time of, you know, 10 to 20 seconds.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So really, that's what it's all about, isn't it? You can run your model in a container now. Like, that's just crazy. Yeah, reduced to just to a container.
I mean, you could probably still run your model in a container previously, but now you can run it in a serverless container. That's probably more interesting. And, you know, I mean, we know how, you know, sometimes you might have to, it may feel like you're selling a leg and an arm to run your AI, Gen AI models. This is, you know, just going in that direction of making it more accessible to a lot more people. I think that's the biggest win I see from here.
And that's going to be, we're going to see this recurring theme, you know, through a few articles in this episode, you know, the cost of AI and trying to get the cost down. I think that's sort of the next iteration on it now, right?
Yeah, 100%. Some of the new cases for developers in Cloud Run with this is performing real-time inference with lightweight open models, like the Gemma 2B or 7B models or Llama 3 to build custom chatbots or on-the-fly document summarization while scaling to handle really, really large volumes of traffic, serving custom fine-tuned Gen AI models such as image generation tailored to your use cases and scaling down, right? So that, I think that's the real key. You don't have to constantly run this in a big compute instance or in a massive Kubernetes cluster. You can run it and scale down to really
scale
down to zero, right?
Get your savings that way. Yep. So what does it give you? You get 24 gig of VRAM. You can, you know, with that, you can get fast token rates up to 9 billion parameters. And as you say, you can run your Llama 3.1, your Mistral and Gemma. When your app's not in use, it scales automatically down to zero. Just reading from the article there. So this sounds like a big, you know, a fantastic cost saver and a big, you know, a big bump for those that are running models in the cloud.
Yeah, and it feels like Google's really pushing Cloud Run to be their flagship service that can do that. You can throw a lot of things to, especially with, you know, I don't know if we talked about in the last show, but there are essentially Cloud Functions is also going to be Cloud Run soon. So
yes, that's what I was going to say. To go along with this now, we've got Cloud Functions, I believe it's Cloud Functions 2nd Gen is now Cloud Run, right? Or Cloud Run Functions.
Correct.
They've kind of conflated the two terms, but it's Cloud Run Functions,
Well, Cloud Functions 2nd Gen was already running Cloud Run under the hood. I think they just rebranded it to be Cloud Functions Run or Cloud Run Functions. One of those two names. I can't remember off the top of my head. But I think the biggest takeaway for me was like, it feels like we're slowly just phasing out Cloud Functions and just putting everything in Cloud Run and making Cloud Run just this beast that can do a really simple web page and also run Gen AI models.
Yeah. Well, I had the need to convert some Gen 1 functions to Gen 2 earlier in the week, and I did that. And sure enough, when you do it, Cloud Build goes away and builds a container, and it's and you can see it. You can see the container running in Cloud Run, but it also appears as a function. So, yeah, they've integrated the two together like that.
And how complex was that, out of curiosity, to move Gen 1 to Gen 2?
piece of cake. Piece of cake. I was expecting a whole lot of complex things. I did it in Terraform. You know, to cut a long story short, all I had to do was add a V2 to the resource blocks. And then I had to set, you know, how you set the invoker permissions to say all users. So the cloud run, so for first gen functions, the invokers, because it was a public available HTTP trigger, the invoker for gen one functions was all users. All I had to do was also set the invoker for cloud run to be all users, to allow it to be publicly run, and basically flip it over to V2, and that was kind of it. I did have, for my particular function, I did have to rev the Python version and bring it up to 3.9, which mean I had to do some funky stuff with the requirements, because the Flask framework needed to be within a particular version. But other than, once I figured that out, yeah, piece of pie, really.
Upgrade your functions to Gen 2. You get a chance then.
So, yeah, go and check that out. Link in the show notes. There's one blog article that covers the two there. There's also a blog article on the LLMs and Cloud Run as well. Yeah, definitely interesting stuff. All right, moving on. Talking about AI and what they're spending, like I said, this is going to be an ongoing theme. Google to spend $1 billion, $1 billion, to power cloud and AI growth in Texas. You know, one state in the US, they're pumping $1 billion into their already existing data centers that are there.
Yeah. I mean, again, comes as no surprise if you've been following this show for a while. Every other week, it feels like we hear Google investing more and more into their data centers as, you know, cloud computing just Gen AI, any compute is taking over and, you know, going off the ground. We just need more compute, more power, more investments from the hyperscalers, right? So
that's right. Yeah. And this article does specifically call out that they're doing this to meet the demand for Google Cloud's AI innovations.
This increases Google's investment in Texas to more than $2.7 billion. So, you know, they already had invested a fair bit previously.
And, you know, they call out in this article the power consumption as well, which, you know, we've had discussions on. It's expected that a total of 375 megawatts of carbon-free energy will be provided. So the energy we use to support the data center operations in Texas. So they're trying to run these things as green as possible you know, not pollute the world. Let's hope.
Yeah. I mean, Google has a carbon neutral aim by 2030, I'd like to say, off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I think it aligns with the global, you know, strategy as well.
Objectives, yeah, yeah.
I think this just leads on very well with the next article that we're going to talk about.
It does indeed, and that is the astronomical amount of money that's being spent on cloud globally. And we'll get on to the actual amount that's spent on AI later, but globally, the cloud is just going through the roof. To take a quote from this article here, this is Canalys, global cloud spend leaps 19% in Q2 2024. The global spending on cloud investments grew 90% year on year to reach $78.2 billion US. Wow. The top three vendors, AWS, Microsoft, and Google Cloud, collectively grew by 24% this quarter to account for 63% of total spending. AWS showed a notable increase in growth compared with the previous quarter, Q2 up 19%, whereas Microsoft and Google Cloud continue to show robust double-digit growth at 29 and 30% respectively. So this is what the last Q2 quarter you know, hype was about for Google Cloud. We grew the most. We grew 30%, you know, whereas the others were 29 and 19%. And this train ain't stopping, right?
No, absolutely not. And what I did find interesting was the market shares. So it's largely remained the same. I mean, there's been small changes if you have a look from 2022. But, you know, unsurprisingly, AWS still has the biggest market share at 33%, followed by Azure at 20%, Google Cloud at 10%, which has largely been the same over the last year, which was a little bit surprising to me, actually. And the other clouds have around 37% market share.
Yeah, I'm surprised that the other clouds have that much, to tell you the truth. I suppose we're talking probably, like Alibaba, yeah. Oracle, IBM, Salesforce, I guess.
I do wonder if the, you know, Alibaba is probably like has a big presence in the Asian markets, for example.
So we just don't see it here. Yeah.
Yeah. Correct. So that's probably one of the reasons I'd say of, you know, the others having such a big cloud, such a big share of the pie.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a bunch of other numbers in that article. Once again, I'll link it in the show notes. Go and have a look. You can see how Google Cloud is tracking compared to everyone else.
TLDR, just lots of cloud spend.
Basically. All right, then, moving on. Quick one here we're just throwing in. Came across this article during the week. Best practices for businesses migrating to Google Cloud. It's not quite a list, but it kind of is a list. It's got a few things in it. Basically, they're saying move slowly, take your time, try not to avoid making costly mistakes. That's what it boils down to. What did you take away from this dish?
Yeah, I think one of my biggest takeaways, not just from this, but also just experience working with our clients in the past, working in migrations, is a lot of people plan their target state, but we actually don't spend the time to understand the current state. So we say we want this end state that, you know, has all these bells and whistles, but we don't actually have a full picture of what we have on-prem, for example. Yeah. And that's where, at least for me, I find, you know, biggest challenge working with customers is every day you're finding something new that no one in the organization knows about, or maybe one person knows about and that's never been raised before. So I think that was my biggest takeaway. Like, you need to really understand the full picture of what's currently in your environment on-prem before even really thinking about doing the execution of migration.
Yep. And it's surprising, a lot of enterprises just don't have a full understanding of everything that's there, right? People have left, they've got legacy applications, legacy architecture, and, you know, gremlins are popping up all the time that no one fully knows.
Yeah, and a lot of the times the scenarios are more like, it just works right now, and once as soon as we remove something, then things break, right? So you don't know what actually caused things to break, and once we start moving things from off-prem to on-prem to Google Cloud, and one other call out from this article is the journey doesn't necessarily end after you migrate your workloads from on-prem to the cloud. There's lots of optimizations that you can actually make after going to the cloud. You can modernize your application. You can start looking at cloud native services. You know, get off those GCP instances. Once you get onto GCP, continuous improvement.
So let's break down what they do mention here. They kick it off with develop a solid migration strategy, and this is what you touched on earlier. Everything starts with a well-thought-out strategy. Rushing the process can lead to costly mistakes. Factor in time for testing, training, and potential setbacks. So, plan, right? Failing to plan is planning to fail. Choose the right migration tools. Yeah, there's a bunch of tools you can use to help you move in. Third-party tools. Google offers tools like, data migration tools or, migrate for compute, stuff like that, that you can use to help move into Google Cloud. Prepare your source environment. This is what you were touching on just then. A lot of thoughts given to where you're moving to, but not where you're moving from. You might want to do things like remove old unused data, optimize database, shut down legacy apps, do general cleanups. You know, one of the common things that I've seen is, you know, production and non-production sort of intermingled and mixed into one environment. Not really cool. Maybe try to split that out first before you move, or just pick out your non-prod stuff first, you know, something like that. Try and clean that up as before you move. And then have a good plan for your target environment. During the execution of the migration progress, prepare to make changes as you move along. Stick to your timeline. Bear in mind that you're probably revising things down the line. So you're going to bump into roadblocks and hurdles and things, and just be flexible and be prepared to either wind things back or sort of change tack with things, you know, as you start to move workloads and build things out. And then, as you touched on then, just then, Adish, post-migration, it doesn't end there. You should just constantly optimize and constantly look for ways to reduce the cost. Don't go back on-prem. Like, it can be cheaper if it's done properly. Going back on-prem is an anti-pattern once you're in the cloud. Just stay where you are and look at ways, find your big hitters, find your quick wins, try and reduce the costs on those. And at the end of the day, you'll be in a better position.
Yeah, I think that's a great call out. Cloud, when not managed well, can be really, really expensive as well. And that's where you need to have a good grip and understanding of environments when you're in cloud. You know, have stringent monitoring alerts for costs.
Quotas,
because you're going away from this from your infrastructure, your technology infrastructure being a capital expenditure, to your infrastructure, cloud infrastructure, your IT infrastructure being a operational expenditure, because it's in the cloud. You get a monthly bill. You don't have to manage servers. That comes with its risk, but when you can get it right, it comes with a lot of benefits as well.
Absolutely. All right. Well, with that said, let's move on. let's move on to a couple of interesting items. So US Appeals Court revives Google privacy class action. This is a US Appeals Court said Google must face a reviewed lawsuit by Google Chrome users who said the company collected their personal information without permission. There was a case last year, Google's agreement last year to destroy billions of records to settle a lawsuit claiming Alphabet Unit tracked people who thought they were browsing privately, including in Chrome's incognito mode. So this is on top of that. It was previously the lower court judge who previously dismissed the class action should have assessed whether reasonable Chrome users consented to letting Google collect their data when they browsed online. So what's happened this time is the Google is collecting users' browsing data even if they've not logged in or elected to sync.
That's scary stuff, right?
It's
scary, but not surprising. How many times have you set something really random and all of a sudden you start getting ads about those things on your Chrome, right? So I'm not totally surprised by what's being claimed here. But that's scary stuff. I'm just interested what made this case reopened? Was it like a reappeal from affected people, like a class action? That's what I'm not certain about. The article mentions that the proposed class covers Chrome users since July 27, 2016, who did not sync their browsers with their Google account. So if you didn't sync your account, your data was still being collected, allegedly being collected by Google. Collected.
That's right. That's right.
Because it was dismissed in December 22. So, curious as to what reopened this case, or was it just a reappeal at a higher court?
It's not clear in the article what that is. But they found themselves in over hot water again. They found themselves in hot water again over collecting data that goes against their own privacy policy, right? So, the judges said they said Google should have honored Chrome's privacy notice, which said to users, don't need to provide any personal information to use Chrome, and Google will not receive such information unless they turned on the sync function. Yeah. But apparently they did.
Yeah. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. So we'll keep an eye on this case. It looks like it's dug up an old wound, and it could... Yeah, look, I don't know. I think there are these things... They're quite often not a problem. You know, Google will just throw lawyers at it until it goes away, basically, try and settle out of court. But if it's been going since 2016, it could be a lot of people, though.
Yeah.
It could be a big problem.
Yeah. I mean, the more people that's affected, the weaker Google's case becomes, right?
All right, then. Moving on with a couple of security items. Google Cloud unveils new convergence-focused security features. Now, they've launched a bunch of new features here. This was at Google's annual Cloud Security Summit. And Google Security announced three main new capabilities. Mandiant Custom Threat Hunt, new Security Command Center capabilities, and Chrome Enterprise Premium updates. What do you think of these?
Yeah, they're very, I think Google's really pushing security as being one of the key differentiators, I think, as a cloud service provider. So no surprises to some of these new capabilities. So Security Command Center is Google's secure enterprise-grade GCP security monitoring offering, and they've made lots of new announcements for that. So one of them is never before seen toxic combinations that create vulnerabilities and allow access to vulnerable resources. So the ability to surface those things, update to what it does. It finds, toxic combinations, using what Google are calling their virtual red teaming. So it's doing that red teaming activity, but in quotes, virtual way. So which does constant simulations to determine attacks. So yeah, very, very interesting stuff.
Because we see this all the time, right? I mean, quite often they'll use multiple CVEs or multiple vectors to combine to get an attack solution, right?
Yeah. So they're trying to do lots and lots of simulations to, figure out attack scenarios, essentially.
It also includes Mandiant Custom Threat Hunt, which offers point-in-time threat hunt capabilities to complement managed detection and response services. The service, which can be used in supplements to in-house threat hunting programs, helps organizations uncover ongoing and past threat actor activities in their environment while improving their ability to detect future threats. So just an ongoing threat hunting detection, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. I think the other important one was the Chrome Enterprise Premium updates as well, which includes capabilities, new capabilities in the Enterprise edition of Chrome. These enable users to obtain faster and easier protections with pay-as-you-go pricing. So trying to, you know, bring that cloud mentality of pricing into Chrome as well. Protect data with watermarking. Gain greater visibility into browsing activity. that's a interesting topic after our last article.
Well, for enterprise, you may want that, right?
So basically, to gain that greater visibility, they're looking at URL filtering for browser history and view Chrome security insights for nuanced understanding of threats as well. So just making browsing secure at an enterprise grade, which, you know, we hear about a lot of the security threats that come into play with people just not doing sensible things. In big organizations, so I can see how this can protect big enterprise from, you know, human errors, human negligence.
Absolutely. And to go along with that, there are two other security features. We now have Privilege Access Manager, which is now in preview, and we discussed this on the show a few episodes ago. Enforces the principle of least privilege with just-in-time, time-bound, and approved-based access elevations for high-privileged users. Very cool. And we now have VPC service controls, which now support private IP. So you can include your internal corporate IPs in the VPC service control, like a traditional firewall would. Very cool.
Yeah, I think that's very important. I think that's been a blocker for many organizations to use VPC service controls across the organization. There's always like whitelisted projects and services because of that limitation. So this might actually nudge more people to start using VPC service controls.
Encourage them to use it. Yeah.
Yeah, and also there was another announcement of a confidential VM option, which allow protection of data and applications in use with hardware-based memory encryption as well. So I can probably think a use case would be if you're processing lots of PII data in your Kubernetes cluster or something like that, would be very handy for that.
All right, and to go along with that security item, we've got another security item. Google partners with Australia to strengthen cybersecurity for critical infrastructure. Now, this obviously grabbed my attention because it's Google and it's an Aussie story, but Google has partnered with the CSIRO and the two parties are focused on devising revolutionary digital tools for hospital, defense organization, and energy providers, which are considered critical infrastructure operators. These tools will be able to automatically detect and eliminate software vulnerabilities. So you can bet some of what they're building out here is going to be based on some of that stuff we just talked about, right?
Yeah. And the good thing is it's, you know, there's this partnership with CSIRO. I think I hold CSIRO in pretty high regard in their research and capabilities. So, you know, you're bringing Google's know-how of, you know, technology, of cloud, of security, of data, and CSIRO's research ability into, you know, creating this synergy of creating more innovations to protect Australians against security breaches, because we've been getting security breaches just about every other week these days, so.
Yeah, and they call that out in this article. They say a number of high-profile cases, including Medisecure, Ticketmaster, Shell, Telstra, and Optus, among others, have posed substantial threat of identity and financial theft to a significant number of people. And that's just in Australia, right? Not, you know, we talked about it on the show many times. Australia seems like a soft touch, but this article goes on to say, this is Stefan Avogustakis, I've completely butchered the name, Google Cloud's head of security practice for Australia and New Zealand, says he has commented Australia's approach, stating that the country has led the way in legislative measures to control and combat the risks. Such a statement suggests that the country may be considered a leader in global cybersecurity policy and practice. Well, I don't know about that so much. I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, I shake my head to that as well. I mean, the policies are only as good as what's implemented as well, right? So you can have all the policies in the world, but if those policies are not adhered to, that's the problem as well. So I can't make a comment on whether these policies are great or not, but I can definitely make a comment from what I see is the implementation is not quite there yet.
Put the policy in place, but then there's going to be a lag for the implementation.
Yeah, right? Correct. Yeah. And I think that's one of the key call-outs from this article is saying that the initiative is committed to providing transparency and accessibility, and the project's findings will be made public, providing critical infrastructure operators with easy access to vital cybersecurity information. And this open approach is designed to foster a collective defense strategy, enabling organizations across various sectors to benefit from the latest cybersecurity insights and tools.
Very good. This partnership aligns with Google's broader commitment to Australia, and we've mentioned this before, following its 2021 pledge to invest $1 billion in the country over 5 years. And that aligns with their investment in similar type of investment and program in the US, which is around $9 billion in cybersecurity. All right. Well, you know, I'm glad to hear that actually something is being done about it. And, you know, we're all going to be a little bit safer as a result. Because, you know, the scams have got to stop. The breaches have got to stop. It's nearly a weekly occurrence. And it's frightening to think that, you know, your data's out there and it can be exposed in such a way.
Yeah, and the problem for the general public is they don't know what to trust and what not to trust, right? It's getting to a point where you're getting so bombarded with false messages and emails because information has been leaked. When important information comes along, at least for me, I'm questioning it 10 times before doing anything about it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm so nervous now of phishing emails and, you know, scams that, you know, more often than not, I'll flag legitimate stuff, you know.
Can't trust it. It's funny because yesterday I got a message on my phone saying there's a fire in my local suburb, and the suggestion was because it's starting to get pretty smoky to stay in. I actually didn't believe it for a while, but it turns out it was actually true. It was actually important information. But because I get so many, you know, scam emails and messages, I actually didn't believe it for a long time.
Right. So it's kind of having the negative effect, right? Like, what if your house was about to burn down and you didn't believe the message?
Yeah. Correct, it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's getting harder and harder to believe stuff. And, I mean, we're not going to talk about it today, but even with some of the AI video that's out there now, right. So when do we get to the point where video is just no longer submissible as evidence? We're almost there, right?
Yeah.
All right, speaking of AI, let's get on with the AI wars. First story in the AI wars is the stunning costs of AI. AI revolution's stunning costs. Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Oracle investing $225 billion over 12 months. I mean, that is staggering, really. Here's an article from the Cloud Wars. He goes on to say, what I find intriguing is the big new challenge created by that whopping level investments from those four hyperscalers, who cannot afford to simply pass on all of those costs along to their customers. Now, this gets back to what we were talking about at the top of the show. So they're spending all this money, right? We just said $225 billion over 12 months. But here's the thing. if all of those costs were passed on to the people that actually used it, you wouldn't pay it, right? They couldn't afford to do it, right? They're investing in the hyperscalers are investing in the future of AI and hoping that it gets somewhere, right? And the only thing that they've got to do, what they've got to try and do, is get the costs down, the actual running costs of this thing down, so that they can get it out to the mass market.
Yeah, 100%. And the other side to that coin is the hyperscalers cannot afford to not spend as well, because if they're not spending on the latest and greatest, they'll be behind the competition. So customers won't actually be onboarding to their systems if they don't do the innovation and spending on all the infrastructure, right? So
it's an arms race, right? Unfortunately, it costs a lot, right? It costs a lot to do this. And we live in a world now where people basically expect stuff to be free. That's kind of where we're at, right? Like, music costs next to nothing now. There's so much free stuff on the internet. You know, that piracy is rife. People get stuff for free that way. They're not going to be forking out hundreds of dollars just to, you know, tinker around and create a few AI images or, you know, 2-second video clips.
Yeah, 100%. And some of the interesting numbers that I found here was just looking at Q2 spending and looking at the four big spenders there. Microsoft at $19 billion. Amazon actually at $17 billion. Google at $13 billion and Oracle at $7 billion. What I found interesting was Amazon's name there. Yes, they're big, but we normally don't hear a lot about Amazon when it comes to their AI capability. But I guess they're really trying to catch up to Microsoft and Google right now. Started a little bit later than those two, and started, you know, even in AWS, the AI features came out a lot later. Yep. Compared to Google GCP or Azure. So they're probably trying to spend a lot more to catch up to those hyperscalers.
And here's a little anecdote, a personal anecdote. You know, I'm watching there on YouTube. I got the app on the TV, so I don't have the ad blocker on the TV. And getting ads for Microsoft Azure AI and Amazon AI, but not getting ads for Google AI.
On YouTube.
What's going on there? On YouTube. On YouTube. Yep, on YouTube. The irony is not lost on me, Dish. But that's spend there. Look, there. In my book, that's all even Stevens. And I think Google's getting the biggest bang for buck, to be honest with you. Microsoft obviously has the spotlight with ChatGPT, you know, Google was working on this a long time before the other hyperscalers were, and, you know, only spending $13 billion, and they've got a model that's competitive. My opinion, I think they're really getting the biggest bang for their buck.
100%. And look, what Google has on other hyperscalers is they actually have this massive thing called Google Search. And terabytes and terabytes of petabytes and petabytes of data.
Yep. Don't forget the hardware. Don't forget the hardware Google's producing as well.
Yeah. And they've got, you know, a very big cloud presence now. So definitely agree with you, Banky, that Google's getting the biggest bang for their buck.
Yeah. So to take a quote out of the article here, just on what you were saying, it's not just a matter of simply getting ahead in AI, but you also keep the model current, and it's going to take larger and larger data centers, and some of the data centers we have and we are planning are actually even bigger. Right, so yeah, this train ain't stopping. Some are getting very close to, dare I say it, a gigawatt of power consumption in a data center. That is astronomical, which is pretty good sized city or one enormous AI cloud training data center. Power a city or a data center, you know, take your choice.
Yeah, crazy stuff.
take another quote from the article. Your capital expenditure, including finance leases, were at $19 billion in line with expectations, and cash paid for PP&E was $13.9 billion. Cloud AI-related spend represents nearly all of the total capital expenditure of $19 billion. That's a quote from Hood from Microsoft.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, this is AI revolution, like I said, is probably, as we can agree, is probably the biggest change that we're seeing in technology in a long, long time. So if you want to be the best, you got to fork out the dollars, right? So that's
it. It's the arms race, yep.
Yeah, it's absolutely the arms race.
All right, link for that in the show notes. And on that, we might wrap things up, hey? It's been a great show.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yep. Thoroughly enjoyed the show. Unfortunately, the last show of GCP Life.
Yes.
Lots of great memories.
It's been a ride. It's been a learning experience for me. You know, it's really set me up for the new show as well. And we were able to get things in place and get things to launch really quickly. With the new show, GCP Bytes, expect more of the same. Expect to be kept up to date with the latest on Google Cloud and keep across the personalities on the show as well and get the latest in what they're doing. But as for you, Adish, it's been fantastic working with you over these last few weeks, or how long you've been here now, a couple of months. I wish you all the best on your future endeavor.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Banky. I still remember when I first joined, at the time, Kasna or Manta Group. I think you were the first person I had a project with. It was the old Thea project, if you remember.
That's right. Yes.
That's when I was brand new to cloud.
Yep. Yeah. You were fresh faced, brand new to cloud. And we got together and punched out some Terraform and did a couple of things on that that platform that hadn't been done before. We had to figure out some stuff, but we got there in the end.
Yeah. And funnily enough, we were doing AI before AI was cool. We were doing like document scanning and getting all the information out of documents, which is what all this Gen AI stuff is trying to do right now.
That's right. Yeah, that was early days of AI, wasn't it? Yeah, detecting and reading documents in real time. Well, all right, don't forget, I guess I could do this for the last time. You can contact the show, gcplife@mantlegroup.com.au, or if you want to contact the new show, it's going to be contact@gcpbytes.com.au. You could go there. Or you can go to YouTube, to find the show on YouTube, start the discussion there. You can find the new show on YouTube as well. And don't forget, the sponsor of this show is Mantle Group. At Mantle Group, we make your Google Cloud solutions possible. I have been your host, Stephen Bancroft. And you have been our co-host, Adish Panta. It's been fantastic, guys. We'll catch you on the other side. Bye.
See ya.